It is your Monday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It's Ian Menes, Hilly Salvian, back together again and back to recap the Stanley Cup Final after Colorado secures a Stanley Cup Championship Sunday night. We'll talk about all the storylines coming out of that one. Nazem Kadri, Cale Makar. Is this the end of the road for Tampa? It's a big day in hockey, too, on this Monday. Hockey Hall of Fame announcement is going to be coming down later. We'll chat a little bit about that. We got a lot to get into on this show. But, Haley, I got to say, out of transparency, because I did write about this, so I feel like, okay, now I can share. And I won't overshare. Don't worry. I won't overshare. But the reason why I wasn't with you last week in the Monday time slot, I was sidelined with kidney stones. And I got to tell you, this is the most painful thing I think I can ever go. Like, I can't even describe the pain to you. I don't know what the most painful thing that you've ever had happen to you. Like, I think you broke, what did you break? Your foot at one point? Or toe?
My baby toe?
Yeah.
It sucked.
Yeah. Is that probably the worst? Is that the most same. Pain you've... Is that the most pain you've ever had?
I had some knee I had knee injuries when I ran cross country and track when I was in university, and I had some knee problems, but I didn't actually ever tear anything fully, so I never had that full injury experience, just the, you know, terrible knee pain every time you run. Just a nice dull ache that never goes away.
Oh, I would gladly take a nice dull ache that never goes away. Because this thing is like, it's almost like if somebody takes an ice pick and stabs you in the back. Oh. That's the only way I can describe this feeling. It's awful. Ooh. And I don't know that I'm out of the woods yet. But I would love to, if any of our listeners have dealt with this before, my goodness gracious, please reach out to me with whatever tips you had to either pass the stones, manage the pain. I'm open. Like, I'm into anything at this stage of the game. Like, I'm into that.
Please help.
If it's weird, holistic, I don't care what it is. I'm in.
Get some sage, burn it in your house.
Yeah.
You need to cleanse whoever you pissed off, who did this to you.
Yeah. It's like, do you think there's a voodoo? Maybe there might be a voodoo doll of me out there that's just being...
Someone's actually just stabbing you in the back in a voodoo doll, actually, is what's happening.
Well, because this is coming right off the heels of... I was playing softball this year. I was like, you know what? I need to get back into, you know, playing some sport. So I play softball. My first game, Haley, torn hamstring. This has been a terrible reminder that I'm in my 40s now. This whole
I was gonna say, like, what did stuff. You? Was it like a pre base? Like, were you stretching? Or were you running the bases?
No, I was rounding third, rounding third, headed for home.
Were you just running and then went oh?
Yeah,
started
totally. And I didn't make that.
I ran
noise.
Too hard.
Yeah, I did. I planted anyway. So this has not been a great stretch for me.
That's tough.
Physically speaking, but I will gut it out to do. You know what? And it's a perfect place to lead off, because when you listen to Peter Baugh's coverage and Joe Smith's coverage has just been dynamite throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. But watching them, their coverage, and reading about, you know, Nazem Kadri. Let's start there. Had an injury, Haley, that he said after winning on Sunday should have been a 6-week recovery. Mm-hmm. He was back in under 2 weeks to play.
He broke his thumb in multiple places. Like, it wasn't just like a, it was like a multiple kind of issue and up and around there for him.
You know, everybody kind of reveals their injuries. It's remarkable. But I mean, let's start there, because I think the Nazem Kadri vindication story might be as interesting of a storyline as anything that came out of the Stanley Cup for the Colorado Avalanche. That post-game interview where he makes the call, he straight up addresses the fact that people
what
think
was it that he said, you can kiss
playoffs.
My ass?
Kiss my ass. For people who
can
think
say
I've
that
been...
On here?
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, Nazem Kadri said it on TV. How can we not say it?
We're fine.
Yep. We're fine. Kiss my
ass. That was awesome.
It was great.
I think I saw a PJ Stock post about it. He was my co-host when we did the Olympic show. Obviously, PJ played. He played for the Bruins. And PJ posted something like, every player at some point in their career has felt this at some point. Like, to the people who doubted me, to the people who hate me, like, you can kiss my butt. It almost sounds weird when you say butt. And he was like, but you don't really get that many opportunities to actually say that. And he's like, winning the Stanley Cup is the time to let that out and finally air that out there into the world. Like, winning the Stanley Cup is the platform that you take to tell everyone who's doubted you to kiss my ass.
It's really remarkable, though, because, you know, what he went through in that St. Louis series with the kind of the racial taunts that were directed at him, he responds with a hat trick. He gets that injury in the Edmonton series, hit from behind by Evander Kane. We think, well, that's it for him. Comes back, scores the overtime winner. And I get it. I understand that overtime winner was cloaked in a little bit of controversy with the too many men, whatever. Okay, whatever.
Just over 2 weeks after having surgery on his thumb.
Yeah.
Like 16 days or something. Like, it was wild.
Yeah, it's one of the great stories.
Yeah, and after what happened in Toronto too, I know there's some Leafs fans who are always going to root for Nazem Kadri, and there's some Leafs fans who are never going to forgive him for the suspensions and for the things that happened with the Leafs. But, you know, Peter did a really great story, and I know he traveled to London and spent some time with Nazem's family. You know, met the parents and talked to his wife and everyone for this story. Like, that trade hit him very, very hard because he was somebody who grew up wanting to play in the league and, you know, wanting to play for the Maple Leafs, and then everything went down the way it did. And I think being traded from that team, like, really hurt him. And I think it took him some time to just recover from that fact. Like, that's the thing. Like, these are people, right? And I think we forget that so often. Like, this was a person being uprooted from everything that he knew. And then even more so, this is a person who's being racially taunted in one of the biggest moments of his life. I mean, that doesn't even matter. Just the racial taunting in any environment is horrible. And, like, Nazem Kadri's been through a lot. And I think you saw that in his celebration. Like, you saw how much he'd been through and the relief when he's lifting the cup over his shoulders and how happy this person looks to finally get through all that shit that has been thrown at him and finally reach the peak. Like, that was, I thought that was a really special moment. And then seeing him, I think there was a picture of him with his dad out there.
Yeah.
Like, he was someone for sure that it was like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, that's always my favorite moment. The Stanley Cup Finals is when you see everyone getting the cup and everyone has their moment, and then you see their families and the post game. Kyle Bukauskas did an amazing job on the broadcast with post game interviews. He had me tearing up a bunch of times, but I thought Kadri's celebration specifically and his interview were real, real highlights of the post game celebration for sure.
You know what? You mentioned Pete, and Peter did a fantastic story on Nazem and kind of his journey. And it was Peter's story, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I always thought this was weird. Tell me if this was weird. That when the day that Nazem Kadri got traded from Toronto, Kyle Dubas phones him and says, you've been traded. Kadri's at home with his family, and he doesn't tell his family what happens. He walks into the bedroom, closes the door, and posts on Instagram that he's been traded, then comes out and tells his wife, right?
Yeah, I think probably...
But isn't that weird?
The way I see it is he probably needed to deal with that in the immediate aftermath by himself. And then his, like, first priority, because he grew up, London, you know, that's not quite, that's not GTA,
but
yeah. Yeah. Like, growing up outside of Toronto, dreaming of playing there, going through, finally making it, everything that happened. Like, he probably felt a sense of, like, I need to say something to the fans. Now,
but before your wife, like, I just feel like it was like, if I got something like that seismic happened to my career and I got a phone call and I told my wife, just hang on a second, I'll be right back. And then I went and posted on social media, then told her, I feel like it might be a little awkward, but that's just me.
You think she didn't know what the call was about, though?
I don't know. That,
like, Kyle Dubas calls, and then he, like, walks into the room and he needs to be alone. Like, that was probably the thing. Like, he probably went to be alone.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact timeline, but for me, it's like, you know, he probably needed to process that by himself and decided, I'm going to say something. Like, I don't know. Maybe he did tell her. I don't know. I don't remember.
But
I don't think we got the precise timeline of events there.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you can kind of wrap your head around it because of how much playing for the Leafs meant to him and how much the fan base and the organization meant to him. Like, you can kind of understand in his head saying, like, I have – to do this and say something to them as soon as possible. And I'm sure that was hard. That was probably something when he was dealing with the fact that he was traded, like those were probably the things that came to mind is I've loved being a Maple Leaf. I've loved playing for you. I've loved all of this. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's, you know what? And I hope that this obliterates the narrative of you can't win with that guy. Like, you know, like for years, it's like, well, you can't win with Nazem Kadri. Or for years, it was you can't win with Ovechkin or you can't win with whatever. Like, and I hope, and I know there's people out there that, and I'm just going to pick another random guy here, like Jack Eichel. You're going to hear people say, you can't win with Jack Eichel. Yeah, you can. You can win with anybody if you surround them with a really good team. Like, that has to be the takeaway here is that I hope people understand you can win with Nazem Kadri. You can win with these types of guys. And if you're at Toronto, don't you look at this and think to yourself, Kadri, Hyman, Zach, and Connor Brown. Zach Hyman, Connor Brown, Nazem Kadri. We under our umbrella at one point, and those are exactly like that's exactly the type of player we're probably missing at this stage of the game, right? Like that was their window, I think, was to win when they had all of those guys under reasonable contracts. No,
I don't agree because Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander were younger at
fair,
that
fair,
point.
Fair
like
enough.
They weren't the like that's not Rocket, Richard, Hart Trophy, Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews was still great. But that's not 100-point Mitch Marner, 60-goal Austin Matthews at that point in the Leafs timeline. Like when they were losing, it was like almost still sucked for Leafs fans. But like, you know, think of that Boston Bruins series. That it was 4-1. Like I don't think you can look back on that and say like, oh, you biffed it because you had Kadri and Connor Brown. Like no, the Bruins were the better team. The Leafs, they were like 23, 22. Oh my God, not even like how old is Austin Matthews now? Yeah. Like these guys are still young, right? So like we're talking about a core of 19, 20 year olds. Like that wasn't gonna happen. You can look back and still say it's annoying, especially within the context of everything's happened over the last 5, 6 years. But I don't think you can look back and say like you ruined your window of contention because you didn't win with Nazem Kadri. I think both things can be true. I think you can say that Kadri, that you can win with Nazem Kadri while also acknowledging that the Leafs probably needed to do what they needed to do. Like, I think there was a trust loss there, and I don't think that's something that you can easily get back, right? And that was the one thing with Kadri and Jared Bednar. And he goes into the Avalanche, and he gets suspended that 1 year. And, you know, they kind of – they gave him that other shot, and they showed the trust in him, and they just – you know, always made him feel comfortable and not like he was this issue that they needed to contain. And I don't know if he would have been able to achieve that at that point after everything that would that had happened in Toronto. No. So you can win with Kadri, but I also think we can acknowledge that the Leafs probably needed to do that when they did because of the trust factor. And there was the Mitch Marner, Mike Babcock thing that happened too. Kadri was... like, right? Like, what did that do with the trust factor there? You know, we know that Kadri was one of the ones who was on that piece of paper that was used in that whatever mind game trick that Mike Babcock was trying to play too. So I just think it was probably hard for him to see at the time, but obviously the change of scenery was excellent for his career, both individually because of the season he had. He's going to get paid this summer. And also from a team perspective, because he just won a Stanley Cup.
Well, he's going to get paid. And I think he's really enhanced his value, right? Because not only did he have a magnificent offensive season where he averaged more than a point a game, he then, for the most part, was essentially, I know Jordan Binnington and St. Louis fans might disagree, but he was... very disciplined for the most part in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Didn't cross the line and certainly played a big factor, even though he was banged up and his team winning. I just wonder, like, you know, what does his deal look like? Do you pay him like he's a 75 or 85, 95 point guy? Do you think he's more, that was just happened to be on a powerhouse team? He's probably more like a 60 point guy. Like, and I'm really fascinated about what his deal might look like because, like, okay, I guess let me phrase it this way. After seeing him do what he did this year in Denver, do you think he could be somebody's legitimate number one centerman? Or is he just better served as you're perfectly slotted in the two spot?
I think that if Nazem Kadri is your second line center, you're going to be a very, very good hockey team. You know, like that's the ideal 2C behind your like elite superstar level first line center, I think. Like I don't know. I mean, he's still pretty, he's not even that old. He's 31. So we're not talking about like a 34-year-old about to hit UFA status. I mean, he's older than someone like Johnny Gaudreau, but he's younger than Evgeny Malkin. Like maybe that's a different way to look at it. Like if you are a team who needs a centerman right now for the next 4 years, who are you giving more money to, Kadri or Malkin right now? Malkin's 36. You know what? He's coming off of a knee injury.
Kadri, isn't it?
Don't you think for more money and more term? Like Evgeny Malkin is going to go down as the better player. Like that's a Hall of Fame career. Evgeny Malkin and his Conn Smythes and his trophies, his Stanley Cups. He's a 1,000-point player at this point over his career, is he? Is that just Crosby and Ovechkin right now, and Malkin's a little bit behind?
No, yeah, Malkin's missed some games. I'll look that up, but I think if he's not. But I feel like he's at 1,000. No,
I think we looked at this before, but I think if you're a team who says like we need a center right now, you might be giving more money to Kadri right now. Malkin's 35. And yeah, he's an 1,100 point guy to this point in his career. He's going to go down as the better player, hands down. That's not the conversation we're having.
Yeah.
31-year-old Nazem Kadri, who's healthy, coming off of an excellent season, or 35-year-old. He's turning 36 this summer. So 36-year-old Evgeny Malkin, who's coming off of, you know, only playing a partial season due to big knee surgery.
But the thing on Malkin, what's weird, like he was still better than I know he only played half the games this year.
I know that's the thing. We're like,
a game guy. He's 42 Malkin, points.
He was great.
You know what? I think here's what I think happens. I think Malkin gets a higher cap hit. I think Kadri gets the longer term.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I also just wonder if Malkin stays in Pittsburgh. I kind of hope he does.
I want him to go somewhere weird like Nashville. Like, just make it weird. Like, just be like, or Anaheim. You're like, what? I guess. And just Columbus. Like, just some rando place where you're like, what is Evgeny? It's like when Sergei Fedorov went and played in those. Like, Sergei Fedorov was in Columbus at one point. You're like, this guy, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like a lot of the conversation was like Malkin to Dallas because they have so many Russian Dallas players, but they don't have any money. Yeah. Dallas is going to be very interesting this offseason, but you know what? I think, that we're talking about Malkin, like, 35-year-old Malkin, still 20 goals, 42 points in 40 games a season. Like, ho-hum. But that's the level that we've always, like, that's just relative to what we've seen from him as a player over his career. Like, he's an incredible, incredible center. But, like, that's almost kind of a thing. Like, Evgeny Malkin can be your 1C. Absolutely. I think Nazem Kadri could be your 1C. But if you have Kadri behind McKinnon and Malkin behind Crosby, that's like an elite 1-2 punch in your top six. And I think that's probably what your ideal situation is with someone like Kadri. I don't think he's going to be out of his depth as a first-line center, though we haven't exactly – I think it's tough because we haven't seen him in that space in a while, right? Like we're talking about a guy who we've seen in Denver. He wasn't the first-line center in front of Austin Matthews. You know, and Matthews was the guy. So it's kind of hard to say, like, absolutely he can do this. But to draw on Calgary, like, nobody who thought Elias Lindholm was going to be their 1C, right? So I don't know. But I think it's going to be interesting. I think this summer is really interesting in terms of the kind of players that we can talk about. Malkin and Kadri and Johnny Gaudreau. Like, there's so many interesting UFA forwards this summer. And they all kind of are a little bit different. But we were talking about the cup final. But yeah, I don't know what he's going to make. I really don't know what Kadri's going to make on the open market.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the team specifically because there's not a lot of teams with a ton of cap space this summer that might also attract – that might be attractive to him. Like that's always the thing, right? You have to have that perfect package of cap space – you know, the plan to show that you're going to be good slash already good And that's not always easy.
And we should never discount the fact that he finds a way to stay in Denver, right? Like maybe he loves it there so much and he won a cup there and he's willing to take less or they're willing to be creative. Like, we should always assume that staying put is a possibility. It's just, it feels like he could really cash in this summer and someone's going to pay him a boatload of money. And it's certainly well-deserved.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We were really hyped up about this series. And I think a lot of us were hoping, especially when Steven Stamkos opened the scoring on Sunday night, I think we were all dreaming about a possibility of a seventh game back in Denver on Tuesday night. That, of course, didn't happen. And largely because I think Colorado, like, Haley, I know you were live blogging the game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like, that was downright clinical, what they did in the third period. It wasn't like, oh man, Colorado's hanging on by the fingertips and Darcy Kemper. Like, Darcy Kemper made one save that I thought was pretty good, and that was on Nikita Kucherov on kind of a cross-ice quasi one-timer, but Kucherov didn't even get all of it on the shot. Like, to me, that was just downright, like, methodical and clinical. And it's what every team should be doing when you've got a one-goal lead in a game, is do what the Avalanche did in the third period last night, which is put the gas to the floor and go.
And they completely locked it down defensively too.
Yeah.
I think one of the best things about the game last night and the series in general was how unpredictable everything was. I don't think, like, I don't bet anyways, but I don't think I would have confidently put money on really anything at any point. Sure, I can say, like, you know what, I think the Avs are going to take this one and win in six. But I wouldn't actually put my money where my mouth is because everything about this series was unpredictable. Who saw that 7-0 game or 7-2 and, you know, that OT game? Like, who saw a lot of this stuff coming? Like, it was, there was so many twists and turns, and I really do think it lived up to the hype. I thought this was a great series. I thought this was the best cup final we've had in a long time. And that might be recency bias talking, but I think I saw someone on Twitter say, like, that was probably the most fun I've had in a cup final since the back-to-back Penguins Red Wings years in like 08 and 09. Because those ones were awesome. Like, those two cup finals were incredible. But I think what the Avs did so well is the first period was quite even though they didn't start great. Tampa had a better start, obviously, drawing the penalty. They didn't even draw the penalty, or anyways, they end up on the power play less than 30 seconds in. They open the scoring at home, and you think, okay, here we go. Tampa's gonna be able to maybe start locking it down and maybe get one more and then completely shut it down. And then the Avs kind of weathered that first period, came back, and it was very easy, even in terms of ozone time, shot attempts, shots on goal, high danger chances. Like, that was a very even period at even strength after that power play ended. And then I think the second period is when you started to see the Avs really start to take over. It was like midway through the second, you could see the Avs starting to take it up a notch and starting to have the puck more and starting to just cook in the ozone more. And that's when obviously McKinnon scored early in that period. But, you know, then they get what would become the game winner. And then the third period was just a defensive clinic. Like, really, really impressive. Tampa didn't have a shot on goal until 10:13 in the third period. Like, that is not how you're going to come back in a season-ending, defining game, right? But that's exactly how you're going to put a team away, like Tampa, because you can't let Kucherov have too many chances to tie it up. You can't let Stamkos have too many chances to tie it up. And that's exactly what they did. It was like a clinical defensive game. And that's one of the things they do so well is they play D, but they also do it. Like, they're a very good puck possession team as well. Like, that's your best defense, right? Is keeping the puck in their zone So by the time their guys get the puck back, they're so gassed that they have to just dump it in and get a change. And that's what the Avs were doing to them for that third period. It was very impressive.
You know, one thing I noticed with Tampa on Sunday night is for the first time, and you didn't see it against Toronto or the Rangers when their backs were against the wall, but you saw frustration, right? Like you saw Ryan McDonagh hitting, who did he hit from behind now? Why am I blanking? Anyway, he buries the Avalanche player. Pat Maroon is slashing guys. Stamkos shoots the puck at the official. He's lucky he didn't get an extra two there. And then at the end of the game, what I thought, did you see this?
There's so, the Kucherov thing?
Yeah, with 25 seconds left, for the people who didn't see this, this was really weird. 25 seconds left in the game, the Avalanche dumped the puck down the ice. Victor Hedman goes to get it, and he kind of lays up because he's thinking it's going to be icing. Mm-hmm. And the linesman waves off the icing, and everyone's shocked. As this is happening, Nikita Kucherov is at the Tampa bench. His stick is broken. He's trying to get a new stick. For whatever reason, the training staff, nobody had a stick for him. And Kucherov is like, he threw a glove at him, right? Like he threw a glove.
He like threw his gloves off and went on the bench.
Right. And it's like, you got 20 seconds left in your season and your most talented offensive player is throwing his equipment off. Like it was just, I had never seen Tampa get unglued.
I know, but you can also look at it like, and not to not to say like absolutely have a temper tantrum, like do this. Yeah, it's your star player with 25 seconds left in the season and he's throwing his gloves off, but it's also their best player standing on the ice without a stick, asking for one.
Yeah, which is
like, I can get it. Like, odd. Where is totally. His stick? Like, did everyone on the bench just say, like, it's done? You know, like, okay, well, right. I guess I'm just not going to have this ready. Like, I've talked to equipment staff before. Like, that is, I mean, that I remember talking to one of the Sens equipment guys. Like, that's their art form. It's literally just getting the stick out really quickly. Yeah. Like, we've seen equipment guys all the time get the assist, right? Sidney Crosby loses a stick. He's streaking down the boards, and the equipment guy just puts a stick over and he grabs and he goes and scores. We've seen that happen before with like Marner and we see that. This was the complete opposite, where it's like, where's the stick?
Right.
He just was probably the heat of the moment in the game and was like, this is unbelievable. Like, where's my stuff? Not that throwing your stuff at a member of the training staff is ever okay. That's not what I mean, but it was just weird. It was like, he's freaking out. Where's his equipment? Like, weird things happening.
Yeah. I think it was just a great illustration of how the seemingly unflappable Tampa Bay Lightning were suddenly just discombobulated in game
like
six.
And that
full credit to the Avs, because the Avs kind of drove them to it. So now then becomes the question. Look, I think we know, even if they bring Kadri back or not, like, it feels like the Avalanche should be a force to be reckoned with here in the next couple of years. The question, though, is this the end of the road for Tampa? And I know Steven Stamkos was very pointed last on Sunday night after speaking to reporters. Joe Smith in his column basically wrote, hey, Steven's like, why is everyone writing us off? But you know, they've got some free agents here. Andre Palat, who's been a huge part of their team, he's a UFA. Nick Paul, who is just a wonderful fit in there, he's a UFA. And Jan Ruda, who's played some big minutes for them, he's a UFA. But, I mean, listen, Kucherov, Point, Stamkos, Cirelli, Hedman, Sergachev, they're all coming back. Vasilevsky, they're all coming back. Mm-hmm. What are your expectations for Tampa now? Like, do you keep them at the top of the heap saying, yeah, you know what? They've been to three straight Stanley Cup finals. Until somebody dethrones them from the East, they're still the class of the East? Or do we see enough holes in them along the way where Toronto had them on the ropes, the Rangers had them on the ropes, and then finally Colorado finished them off? I can see some holes now that they're a little bit more vulnerable than they were in the past.
I don't know. I think you still have the best goalie in the game in Andrei Vasilevsky. So that's always going to be what makes me think that they're going to be fine. I think Stamkos had, you know, the best postseason season that we've seen him have in a long time. Like, Kucherov's still Kucherov. Like, he's not old. Like, we're not watching him go off a cliff here. I think Sorelli and Point are still young players who are continuing to get better within that system. You still have John Cooper as your coach. I think it kind of depends on what they can do with the very limited space that they have to replace the players that they're potentially going to lose, right? But this isn't them losing Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow and the whole third line this summer, right? Like, this is actually not that bad. Yeah, you're losing Victor Hedman's D partner. But, you know, he's essentially taken cheap deals every single year with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I don't put it past maybe he returns on another discount deal. Maybe he finally cashes in on the fact that he's been to three straight Stanley Cups and he's been Victor Hedman's D partner. There are teams who are going to pay for a player like that. I wrote about, and we're talking about Ruta here, I put him as an option for the Calgary Flames because they need someone beside Oliver Shillington when Chris Tanev's potentially out. I think I saw him on, you know, the Vancouver Canucks, so like maybe he could play with Quinn Hughes. Like, there's going to be teams who are interested in his services. Same with Nick Paul. Same with Andre Palat. So, but that's not losing that entire third line. That was arguably the best line in hockey when they won that. What was it, their second cup? The first cup? When did we all just fall in love with the Coleman, Goodrow, Gord line?
The first cup.
The first one? Yeah. And then came the expansion they lost.
No, they had them for both those, right? And then.
Yeah. I think they were very, very, very good the second Stanley Cup. I mean, they were great in both. Anyways, I don't think it's as a direct hit. I think the Lightning are, all I'm trying to say is I think the Lightning are, they're not going anywhere. Like, this is, their core is still there. They've got the goalie, they got the coach, they got the core pieces. I think if you just look at the East too, like, and think of it too, like, Braden Point, he got hurt in the Toronto game.
Yeah.
In game seven against the Leafs, right?
Game seven, yeah.
They got through the Rangers without Braden Point. And if we believe he's like the future big one.
They swept the President's Trophy winners without Braden Point. Think about that, right? They swept Florida without Braden Point.
That's the thing, right? So yeah, maybe we can say, are they going to have holes from what they did this year? But they look what they did this year without Braden Point. And with the injuries on that roster, John Cooper said that if it was the regular season, they would have had half of their American League roster up right now.
Yeah.
Last night. So I don't think they're going anywhere because they're going to have Point back and they're going to be healthy and et cetera, et cetera. And what team in the East is actually going to get that much better this summer? Everyone's capped out. Who's going to be making like big, big steps to challenge the Tampa Bay Lightning? Toronto's already there. The Lightning, you know, we had Joe Smith on and he said that was the hardest series they'd played. The Rangers are going to be there. That's a great team. They had a good series against Tampa. I don't think Ottawa's going to challenging. Florida's going to probably be better, but
Florida would be the team for me that if they make a couple of tweaks, although they made a massive coaching change that I don't, we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah. So right? I don't know. It's always so hard to do this right now. I tweeted that stupid quote from, you know, did you ever see Holes, the movie Holes? Did your kids ever watch that with Shia LaBeouf where they're digging holes?
No.
They're like in, it's like juvie kid. All they do is dig holes in the heat. Okay, never mind. You wouldn't get it then.
No, go ahead. For the benefit of our listeners who have seen Holes, you can't leave them hanging.
Well, I'm not going to do the... I'm not going to like say the quote if you don't get it. I tweeted this stupid clip from Holes where it's a flashback to the little girl. She's like, I'm tired of this, Grandpa. He's like, well, that's too damn bad. Like, that's how I feel about the Tampa Bay Lightning being good every year. It's like, I'm tired of this, Grandpa. And you're the Tampa Bay Lightning being like, well, that's too damn bad.
See, there, I got the reference. And now the listeners who've watched Holes are like, yes, you nailed it.
Yeah, just you did nailed a it. Really bad kind of Southern accent. I think that's how they talk. Anyways, it was a very funny tweet. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. Take your word for it. Okay, so listen, that was a really fun, like you said, it was a fun series. There was certainly some moments where the tensions started to boil over. And I think that was great because for the benefit of our American audience, Haley, on Sunday, The table was set for that by a lot of people tuning in to watch ESPN's documentary on the Colorado Avalanche and the Detroit Red Wings, great rivalry of the 90s and early 2000s. And first of all, you and I, we live in Canada. We did not have access to this. So we need help from our listeners here. Yeah. Like, give us a preview, like in the comment section, tweet at us. Let us know what your favorite part of that documentary was, because Twitter was a buzz on Sunday afternoon. People were like, wow, that was amazing. Best sports documentary I've ever seen. Great job capturing it. Like, I'm super excited to see this, but I was really frustrated that,
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I don't know when they're going to... I'm sure TSN will show it in Canada at some point, but man, that was frustrating to watch everybody talking about something that you just have no access to.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. I know Sarah Sivian and I did the live blog last night, and she hopped in the live blog and she's like, I am ready for a goalie fight. I just finished watching the ESPN doc and, you know, I'm ready for goalie fights. I'm ready for some drama. And I was like, I don't get the reference. So she was all amped up after watching it. She was a lot more excited for the game than I was, because I had no idea what she was talking about.
There's a lot of people who are kind of in their, late 20s, early 30s that will credit the Detroit-Colorado rivalry for really getting them into the sport. Really, they fell in love with hockey at the same time that those two teams were meeting. And I know, like, for you, I know you, like, the Penguins, the Crosby Penguins were kind of your real first love of hockey, right? Or not?
Yeah. I would say, I think, that's one of my, core memories in terms of really getting into the sport was the draft, like the 05 draft.
Yeah.
I was sitting in an Eastside Mario's.
You were at Eastside Mario's?
With my dad. And we watched the draft with my mom and dad. My all-you-can-eat breadsticks.
Did you have, one of the things when you go to Eastside Mario's, by the way, for our American audience, is a Italian, what would be the equivalent?
It's like discount Olive Garden.
Yeah, there you go, Olive Garden. Exactly. I was like, what can we compare it to? Yeah, it is the Olive Garden. But were you one of those kids when you went to Eastside Mario's that you would order, I want the Jolly Rancher drink with the cotton candy and the crazy straw.
No, you weren't allowed
to have that.
Shirley Temple. I don't need the sides. Just give me the Shirley grenadine. Temple. Give me my Shirley Temple with extra cherries, please.
Oh, God. You have to have the marriage. And the cherries taste better when they're on those little plastic swords, too, right? Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
It enhances the whole experience.
The whole thing. Anyway, so you were at Eastside Mario's.
Yes, I was at an Eastside Mario's.
But wait, when you go, when you watch a draft at a restaurant, is the volume's not on at Eastside Mario's, Olive Garden?
This was in 2005.
Yeah.
I remember if the volume was on. We were in the bar side.
Yeah. Well, look at you.
So the volume was probably on because it was the bar side and it was the draft and Sidney Crosby. So I remember that. But I also remember just going to games and stuff. Like, this is always, and I talk about this all the time, I grew up in a small town and there was nothing to do in Fergus, Ontario. Like, when we got a Walmart and a Target, it was a big deal for Fergus because there was
Target.
Finally,
that Target, we only had Targets in Canada for 6 months.
I know, but it was very awesome. But that's what I mean. Like, there was nothing. Like, we had the Zellers that turned into Target, and then we got a Walmart, and that was the huge deal when the Walmart opened in the south end of town. But anyways, because there was not much to do, my dad and I spent a lot of time just going to Rangers games at the Odd or going to Guelph Storms games. If we were in London, we'd go to London Knights games. And it was this prime time for Canadian junior hockey, right? Because Landeskog was playing for the Rangers and Drew Doughty was playing for the Guelph Storm. John Tavares was playing for the Oshawa Generals.
London had some Cadre, great teams there, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the London – Cadre wasn't on all those teams, but, there was – I think Patrick Kane was on the Knights at one point. You had Cadre on the Knights. You had Corey Perry, Rob Schremp, the 05 London Knights were a big deal. And they obviously went to the Memorial Cup final against the Rimouski Oceanic, which was Sidney Crosby's team in the queue. So those were the core memories, watching Gabe Landeskog and the Rangers at the Odd. My dad and I, and that's what's so great, is being in the sport at this level now. And I'm at home at my parents' place in Ontario right now and watching these games with my dad. There's all these like, you know, you'll watch the game and dad goes, do you remember watching like Gabe Landeskog when you were a kid? And there's all these like just like really nice full circle moments when you actually get to this point working in the NHL and you get to share that with your dad almost. And it's just like, you know, he took me to go and watch him when he was in junior and all that good stuff. So those were, that's kind of what it was for me was Canadian junior hockey. And then, then watching Crosby and then he gets drafted first overall and it's like, hey, that's the guy who lost.
That's the guy.
That's not what I said. That's the guy who lost to Corey Perry. That's not what I said, but that's kind of where it was for me when I was like really, really hooked on the sport. I'm aging myself maybe, but.
No, you're aging me. by the way, two things. One, again, we want to hear from our listeners about that Avs Red Wings documentary because we didn't get a chance to see it. Tell us what you loved about it. And if you know when it's airing in Canada too, or if there's maybe a sneaky way we can watch it, we'd love to hear that. The other thing is you mentioned that you were at your parents' house doing this podcast. You didn't need to tell us that, Haley, because you know when we knew, you know at what point in this podcast we knew that you were at your parents' house? We heard a home phone ringing in the background. We're like, nobody.
I thought you were going to say when my mom came in and brought me a coffee.
No.
I didn't have this when we started recording.
The viewers could not see that, but they could certainly hear the sound of a home phone ringing. And they're like, who is where there is a home phone? The answer is Haley at her parents'
house. I'm not even joking. It does not matter what time of day or what I'm doing. And this is like a running joke with Aaron. Every time I'm on the phone with Aaron, one of our bosses, the home phone rings. And he's like, I don't get it. It's the home phone again.
Yeah, the home phone.
Doesn't matter who I'm on the phone with. It's just, I'll be on my cell phone. I'll be on a Zoom call and the home phone starts ringing every single time. At least once.
Yeah.
So yeah, we still have a landline.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I think what's going to be really interesting, and we want to point out that by the time a lot of you are listening to this podcast, there's a very good chance that the Hockey Hall of Fame has already announced its inductees for 2022. So we're not going to spend a lot of time, you know, it's going to be hard for us because, you know, somebody might get in and, you know, we're debating that. I just, first of all, and I'd love to see the Sedins. I think the Sedins are worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. I think Roberto Luongo is worthy of being in. Heck, people know where I stand on Daniel Alfredson. I think he should be in there. Alex McGillney, Keith Tkachuk, like the list goes on and on. What I would like to highlight though, Haley, what I really want to see from the Hockey Hall of Fame is I would love to see a little bit of transparency in this process. And I say that because I think, like the year that Guy Carboneau got in a couple of years ago, like I had no idea that this guy was even on the radar. And it would have been really helpful to know that, you know what, the year before, like Guy Carboneau just missed out. Like he had 71% of the vote. He needs 75. That would have been helpful information. And I think that's what I'm really lacking here is some tangible information on how close is Rod Brind'Amour? How close is Daniel Alfredson? How close is Mike Vernon and Dom Brasso? Like, these are all people that I think are deserving of being in the Hall of Fame, but I have no idea. And I wish that there was an element of transparency. So I don't want to get into this thing where, you know, I think oftentimes what happens is when people get into the Hall of Fame, we start to nitpick them and we're like, well, this guy, like Rod Brind'Amour would be a great example. People say, oh, he shouldn't be in. He should be in. I think he should be in. And I think Alex McGillney should be in, and Keith Kachuk and Alfie and all these guys, Sedins. I just the wish there was transparency here.
Yeah.
That's all. Is that too much to ask for?
No, I don't think so. I think, and the reason guys like that aren't in though is because you get these first ballot guys coming up. And I remember doing this exercise when I was still on the Sens beat, because we did the mock Hall of Fame committee. And I nominated Daniel Alfredson, and I tried to get him into our fake Hall of Fame. And everyone like was like, it's the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Very Good. And people were like, no. I got zero traction on it. So then I didn't end up voting for Daniel Alfredson, who was my own nominee. Because I was like, you only get four votes. On your ballot, and I'm not going to waste it on someone who everyone just openly pushed back on. And I think it was a very eye-opening part of the process, is it's just like that was just our little work committee. But I think, you know, it's not hard to imagine that that's what Alfredson's been facing in the real Hall of Fame. Why he hasn't been into this point is that there's been people in the committee saying, no, like he's not good enough. And then, you know, if you lose the guy that you're really fighting for, you have to pivot to get someone into the Hall of Fame, right? That's how it works. Everyone, if you don't get a certain amount of votes in the first round, you just get cut. So that's always difficult, but it would be interesting to see that in a really transparent way, like who's voting for who. I think more specifically when it comes to women, I think that's very important. I think it'd be very interesting to see if it's just Cassie Campbell-Pascal nominating women every year and vouching for them every year. Because just for the record, two women can get in every year and two women don't always get in. Usually it's just one, because if it's not somebody who's really vouching for them, like who is really, right? And I think that's been the frustrating part, is there's been way more women with Hall of Fame credentials who have not gotten into the Hall of Fame yet. If Jen bought, like, so to me, Carolyn Ouellette should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Amazing, amazing career.
And she's finally eligible. Right? Yeah.
And she's probably going to get in this year. If Jen Botterill or Natalie Darwitz or someone else does not get in with her, I think that's it's a shame, because there's women who've been waiting to get in who deserve it, but Carolyn Ouellette should be in like right away.
Carolyn Ouellette, like you said, first year nominee. So is Megan Dugan, right? Is first year eligible?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think this is her first one, and you know, she captained that American team to a gold medal. Like you're right though. Like,
but that's the thing, and that's why it turns into this argument. Totally. Megan is an amazing hockey player, and her reach in the sport is going to be greater than just her playing career. She's already gotten a promotion, and in the role she's currently in, she's gonna, you know, she's someone who wants to be involved in the NHL at a high level. And I think she's going to do it, because she's an incredible player. She knows the game. She's very smart. But like Jen Botterill she won her first gold medal, or she went to her first Olympics before she even started college.
Like, right.
She is not recognized as the all-time leading scorer in the NCAA, because they didn't start taking the record books for women's hockey until Jen's third year. But unofficially, she is the highest scoring collegiate hockey player in history. She's not officially, because they didn't start counting her stats until like 2001. But if you actually look at how much she did when she was playing in college, I mean, she's one of the best players to play. And then she had this career arc of being, you know, the young kid who made the team, who nobody really knew. She's 18 years old, and she has success there. And then she's an integral part of the team. She's a very important piece of the team in that middle section. And then in 2010, she's on her way out. She's on the fourth line. And guess who's next to her? Is Marie-Philippe Poulin.
Yeah.
And they win in 2010. And she makes, and she literally passed the puck to Poulin for the game-winning goal in 2010. So to me, I just think Jen Botterill deserves to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. But this is the problem. It's not just Jen. It's Carolyn Ouellette. It's Megan Dugan. It's European players who've been retired for years that nobody talks about because they lose to Team Canada in the quarterfinals. Like, there are so many fantastic, like, women's hockey players with Hall of Fame credentials that people don't talk about because they only get two, and usually only one goes in, and it's just a shame. But anyways, I do think Alfie deserves to go to the Hall of Fame. I agree.
Alfie deserves it. And it's a long list. And that's the point I want to make, too, is that if he doesn't get in today, or if Keith Kachuk doesn't get in today, or if you know you want to say it's Patrick Elias, like whoever it is that you're championing, and they don't get in today, the door will remain open. It's not an open and shut thing where within you know a year or two, they don't have a chance. They have a chance. And there are some really strong first-year candidates this year, the Sedins, Roberto Luongo, Hank Zetterberg. So it's going to be interesting. All I'm saying is let's just get a little bit of transparency here. I think it would certainly help the process and allow us just an insight to know, you know, how close is this guy or girl to making the Hall of Fame? Or are we just, you know, barking up the wrong tree, so to speak, when we're writing these passionate columns on this is why Daniel Alfredson should be in, and then he's getting like 8% of the vote. Well, you know, maybe we're wasting our time. So we'll see how this all plays out on Monday, and I'm sure it will cause a lot of debate amongst hockey fans. All right, let us wrap up the show, Haley, like we always do on a Monday, with a little multiple choice madness, where we just kind of sink our teeth into some fun questions. So let's start with this. We have a fictitious NHL team that we're starting, okay? And I'm giving you a chance, Haley, to start your team. You only get to choose one of these guys, and this is how you start your franchise. You're starting today. You get your choice of these three guys. Who are you taking? A, Connor McDavid. B, Cale Makar. C, Andre Vasilevsky. Who are you taking? You're starting your team today from scratch. You only get one of them, and the rest of them will probably be filled out with some expansion type of thing. Who are you taking? McDavid, Makar, Vasilevsky.
I'm not good at this. I feel like you go McDavid, but like recency bias would. Oh, this sucks. I don't like this question.
That's why I like
McDavid
the question.
McDavid is the best player in the world.
Then
best player in the world. But that has not been enough because their defense isn't good and their goaltending's not good. But guess who the other two options are? One of the best goalies in the world and the best defenseman in the world. So now I'm very. Like, it would be. Because who was it that it was Gabe Landeskog? They asked, "How do teams? This is a copycat league. How do people do what you guys did?" And he goes, "Draft Cale Makar." So now I'm like, Cale Makar. But then Andre Vasilevsky has always been the piece that makes you think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be okay. But just good goaltending can't get you that far. You've got to get run support. Because Ilya Sorokin is like probably the best goalie in the league that nobody talked about this year. He was awesome, but the Islanders weren't good. Would you like to go first? Like, my gut says Connor McDavid, but a part of me wants to say Cale Makar because of what we just watched last night. Like, Connor McDavid's the best player in the league, but Cale Makar is the best defenseman in the league, and he just won the Norris, the Conn Smythe, and the Stanley Cup. Two of those trophies. Well, three of those McDavid doesn't have, but one of them he can't because he's not a defenseman. I don't know, Ian. I don't. What do you think?
So this shows you it's a good question because if you're debating amongst McDavid, Makar, Vasilevsky, look, and again, I don't think there's a wrong answer. I do not think there's a wrong answer. I would go Vasilevsky myself because...
Like, I'm GM of this team, so, like, I can get myself a good goalie and not Mike Smith.
You are the GM. You can do whatever you want, but you only get to choose one of these guys as the backbone of your team. See, I'm going Vasilevsky because I'm a believer in you start from the net out. Like, so if I was starting a team, I want to be competitive and I want to have an idea of winning a cup... I think you got to have a goalie. Vasilevsky's young enough where I feel like he's still got 7 or 8 really good years left in him. He is still, for my money, even though he didn't win the Stanley Cup this year, I think he's the best clutch goaltender in the last X number of years. I would go with him. But I don't think there's a wrong answer. If you want to go Makar, go Makar. You want to go McDavid. But I would probably lean towards the guy that's going to be on the ice the most amount of time. And even though he plays 60 games, he's on the ice all... I would go Andre Vasilevsky, but that's
just me. What if no one else can score?
Right. You're
not going to win 0-0.
But just like McDavid, what if you have McDavid, but you don't have goaltending? Or what if you have Makar?
That's what I said. That's why I'm like afraid to pick David because we've seen what happens when you have Connor McDavid, but you don't have goaltending. I think I'm just not going to answer this one.
She's taking a knee, folks.
Look, my gut says it's McDavid because he's then the best.
That's your
in the
answer,
world.
McDavid. There's no wrong answer.
Yeah, but I'm
answer.
Not going to be happy about it.
Okay, well, then you're not going to like this last question in Multiple Choice Matters because this comes off the heels of the Avalanche Red Wings rivalry documentary that aired on the weekend, which we still haven't seen, but we know that Yzerman and Sakic are central figures in that. Now, Joe Sakic, general manager of the Colorado Avalanche, who just won the Stanley Cup, Steve Yzerman, architect of a couple of gold medal winning teams for Canada, put together the Lightning team, is in charge of Detroit. Here's the question, Haley. Who's the better general manager? Joe Sakic or Steve Yzerman? I told you.
Can you hear me scratching my head on mic?
Yeah.
Like ASMR. disgusting. Apologize. Who's the better general manager, Joe Sakic or Steve Yzerman? I can't answer that without seeing how the Red Wings turn out. You know? Because I think if he not only created the roster that ended up winning, obviously Julien Brisebois did some excellent work at these trade deadlines. Like, he's the GM who's taken over the finish line, but we know that Yzerman is the architect of a lot of what happened in Tampa, right? We can agree on that?
Yeah, I think so. The foundation was certainly laid by
there by him. Obviously, you mentioned national teams, but I feel like I need to know what happens with the Red Wings.
Yeah.
First. I think Yzerman probably has the pedigree for most people to say it's Steve Yzerman, even though he isn't complete with the Red Wings, right? Like, because it's, you know it every time it's the deadline or the draft. It's like, Steve Yzerman's going to do something. Like, Steve Yzerman's always going to do something that works out. And I think we see that process in Detroit right now. And there's a lot of promising things happening there. But I would like to see how the next couple of years go before I can say, because if that works out and we see two teams that he's crafted have success, then it's without doubt, there's no debate, it's Steve Yzerman. But I think Joe Sakic's done a nice job here too. It's probably Steve. I'm probably going to go with Steve Yzerman, honestly. Yeah,
Okay, here's a side question. If you're a general manager,
these are stupid.
Would you rather? This has now turned into a "would you rather." Would you rather win it? Would you rather be the general manager who put together a Stanley Cup championship or a gold medal at the Olympics? Like, you were the architect. Which is the one that you would prefer to, like, be the master of putting together? An Olympic gold medal team or a Stanley Cup team?
I feel like hockey's so different. It depends on your country and stuff too, right? Like,
yeah,
I know it's really hard because I know, say, in like soccer, football, you win the World Cup, you're the champions of the world. If you win Champions League, that's great too. Like, that's probably the same thing. But, you know, a lot of these players, they win a World Cup and
that's like, the ultimate.
That's the ultimate. Like, the World Cup is the thing. Obviously, winning the Champions League is great, but those are sometimes you're against super teams, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I know when France won the World Cup a couple years ago, the last World Cup, like, that was the team I was cheering for, and that was a huge deal. Like, they're that's the dog. That's also how you know that I'm at my mom and dad's, is there's this little floofy, yappy dog named Penny.
Wait, where's Bono right now?
He's sleeping like a good boy. Okay. He's having a nap. But no, I don't know. I think that's probably, to go back to your original question, would you rather? I feel like it's different in hockey. Like, the Olympics aren't the only thing they have, you know? But I think you saw how disappointed it was for the players to not go and how important it is for the players to go. It makes you wonder the way that they value the Olympics. I don't know if they would say that I would rather do one or the other, though. I honestly don't know how to answer that one.
This is a great way to end this.
I think that's something that you'd have to ask, like, a GM, though. No, how, like,
you punted on each of them.
I've never heard anybody, like, put that up against the other. Like, I don't think they would even answer that question. I'm going to win both. Like, what do you think? You haven't answered.
I think I would want to create an Olympic gold medal team. Because it would be best on best. And then I would have the ability
but it's not to manipulate the same,
a best
though.
On best roster, right?
But you're that, not, I think a GM winning a, you know what? I think a GM winning a Stanley Cup is more impressive than the GM winning an Olympic gold medal. Because if you're Canada, oh, you pick Crosby. Oh, great. Thanks, Steve. No, I'm, but you know, it's not the same. It's not the same as making big moves and having to utilize your cap space and manipulate a championship roster against other teams with all the best players in the world. You're the GM of Team Canada and you're laughing.
So there we go. Plucking. I smoked you
Let
out.
Let me just, yeah,
I
there we go.
I smoked you out and there's your answer.
It's the Stanley Cup. I was, you confused me. No, I wasn't sure. I was just thinking of it in terms of like, if you're Steve Yzerman, are you proud of your gold medal or that you've GM'd? Or are you proud of what you did in Tampa? But it's like, it's more impressive to me for a GM to win a Stanley Cup.
There we go. See? Finally, got an answer for you.
And I want to say one more thing about these multiple choice questions. They were nice. I'm going to tweet that one, actually, the Vasilevskiy-Makar McDavid one.
Put it as a poll. Put it out as a poll and give the three options. Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know what? I suspect just based on recency bias, Cale McCarr is going to win this poll.
And yeah, you know what? That's a great idea. And I want to go with him. Like, I want to go with McCarr, but it's also like, McDavid's
there's no wrong answer. I don't think there's a wrong answer to that. But yeah, put that out in a poll. And I think it's going to be roughly almost 50% McCarr and then a split between McDavid and Vasilevskiy and the other two.
Like yeah, we'll 50%. See. But that's the thing. It's like it's the recency bias. We just watched Cale Makar in the last 5 days win three major, major trophies. And
we look forward to Toronto fans. Where's Austin Matthews in the – or no, even better, where's Michael Bunting?
Oh, my God. Ian, I got so many Oilers fans being like, why is Dreisaitl not on your all-star team? It's like, I don't know. Why didn't you ask the 300 other people who didn't vote him for the All-Star team because he didn't make the All-Star team?
It was hard. Like this honestly, this year's voting, and I've only voted a couple times, it was really hard because I feel like there was like six or seven legitimate candidates for the major awards.
This was in particular the Hart Trophy. This was a good year for hockey. It really was. But I had Johnny Gaudreau second on my Hart ballot, and I was open about that. And because I was like, I think Matthews is going to win. Then I wanted Gaudreau and Shesterkin to round out my top three. I ended up going with Gaudreau because I think I get stuck with the goalie heart thing. Like inherently a goalie is always going to be your most valuable player because if your goalie sucks, you're screwed. And if your goalie's good, you're golden, right? So like I was like, two might be a little high because if Shesterkin's that high, he should probably just be one anyways. Like I was galaxy braining the order a little bit. And then I had McDavid four and people were legitimately upset with me. I was like, Johnny Gaudreau had the most 5-on-5 points in the National Hockey League this season. You're acting like I just picked some scrub off the Flames and I'm a homer. I was like, I really like Michael Stone.
Is that the same voice you used for the, what was the movie that you Bulls. Quoted earlier? Bulls. It sounded, I don't know, it's the same.
No, that was a different
character. No accent,
character.
But the same pitch.
No,
the same pitch and tone was used.
And this is the thing, though. We are transparent about the voting process for NHL awards. And it opens you up to some crap sometimes because obviously people are going to wonder why. And it's not crap. I shouldn't even say that. It opens you up to questions, criticism, if people don't believe that you had the right picks or whatever. But I would rather it be like that than say, like, how the heck did this happen? Okay, well, I can go and look and see how it happened, you know? Like, I would rather that. And I think that would be nice for the Hockey Hall of Fame as well to say, like, how the hell did X player, how the hell did Jen Botterill not get put in the Hall of Fame? Okay, here's why. I can go and look.
Transparent. Yeah, like I said, you were we all took criticism for our ballots, but you're able to defend your selections, and that's all I'm asking for with the Hockey Hall of Fame. Like
I took so much time on that freaking ballot this year, the Norris. God.
Yeah,
I voted Yossi for Norris.
I debated
and it
Norris.
Took me forever because, and this is why. Yeah. And I know we're running out of time.
No,
but I put Roman Yossi on my Hart ballot, and I was like, I can't. have him above Makar for MVP, but Makar above him for Norris, even though they're different awards. But in my mind, I was like,
no, that makes
sense. It was razor thin for me. And I thought that the fact that Yossi was by far the MVP for the team. Duchesne had a great season. Forsberg had a great season. But like Yossi was the MVP for the Nashville Predators. He did something that nobody had done as a defenseman in a long time. And I thought that he was carrying around a lesser, relatively speaking, D yep. partner compared to Devon Taves. He's a very good hockey player, Devon Taves. So that was for me. It was like, Yossi doesn't have as much beside him. And he's on my heart. I'm going to go with Yossi. It took me hours. Frank Saravalli texted me like 5 times to be like, why isn't your ballot? And I was like, I'm finishing it. Like, I have 5 more minutes. Give me my 4 minutes. Like, I have it in. It will be in time. I am agonizing over this. Just, it'll be there. I swear.
Oh, I wanted to see on Frank Saravalli's trade bait board, number 9, Haley Salvian's award ballot for next year. It's up in the air.
Yeah, she's done. She's stressed us all out. We're done.
Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, speaking of being done, we should probably wrap this up. This was fun. The week flew by. Now, we should point out that you and I actually get, I think we get the week off next week, Haley, because fireworks here. It's July 4th. So, you know.
That was one of the more weird, chaotic things I think that have happened when it's just you and I on the podcast. Yeah. Yeah. When Dom and Sean are here, it's just like, I don't know what's happening. I was talking about dirty toilet water and you missed it. It was very terrible. Anyways, I was doing the beatbox and you said fireworks emoji. And I think that was really nice of us.
It was great the way we wrapped it up. But hey, listen, this was a lot of fun. And we want to remind everybody to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a rating, a review. We appreciate that. Hey, and leave us your reviews of that Red Wings-Avs rivalry, too. We're just looking for any information we can glean from that. We'd love to have it. Subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. You'll get all of our bonus content from our entire network. You'll start with a 30-day free trial, and then it's 99 cents a month after that. Right now, we got a great deal going on to subscribe with us at The Athletic. It's just $1 a month for 6 months, and you can sign up at theathletic.com/hockeyshow.